All right, well, welcome everyone to the Eternal Beta Podcast, episode 65 for the 25th of May 2021. I'm your host, Audiochron, aka Steve, and it's a special episode this week. We've got the reigning PUBG champion of the Eternal Beta Discord, Mikestar, aka Mike. Welcome back, Mike.
Thank you. I thought you were going to roll with Dave there for a second, who's also with us.
Dave is equally on track to be the PUBG champion.
Well, if you mean champion by the person who gets shot the most, then sure. Yes, I'll take that title.
Welcome, Dave, as well. Hey, man.
Good, good. I am slightly above zero BAC, Dave, tonight.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Blood alcohol something? No.
Content for those outside of Australia, yes. I'm not below zero. I'm above zero.
I don't drink much anymore, see, so I've kind of lost the ability to remember terms like that.
Well, drink more and then you'll equally be able to forget terms like that.
Is that something you need to remember when you're being breath tested? Yeah.
You got to find your police officer and you go, yeah, mate. And you watch the footy, mate. And he lets you off. It's fine.
While you're waiting for a mate, right?
Mate.
Anyway, you guys have been away for quite some time, and it's good to have you back. Although, Dave, you were around last episode, I do recall.
There was a planned episode that is the reason why there's been a little bit of a gap, Eternal Beta listeners, and that was because I'd forgotten.
That is absolutely correct. We basically did a preparing for an episode session without actually doing the episode itself. So here we are, and we're here to talk about video games. As we always do. Mike, since you've been back, what have you been playing?
Well, I picked up a Switch a little while ago now, a couple of months back. And about the end of last month, I acquired Zelda Breath of the Wild. And I have been playing quite a bit of that.
Fancy.
It is. So I'm clearly quite behind the hype train for this game.
Hey, anyone listening to this podcast is also behind the hype train. Usually tied up with a piece of rope and like being dragged along.
Yeah. Well, I guess Dave often, you know, does insights on games that are multiples of age compared to Zelda Breath of the Wild.
Well, I'm just waiting for the PS4 to come out.
But anyway, I have been playing Zelda Breath of the Wild and have been thoroughly enjoying it.
Yeah, cool. How many hours have you sunk into it so far?
Many.
Many? So we're talking like you're in the 50-hour kind of range?
I'd say somewhere around that range, yeah. So I'm about, if I was just doing sort of the main quest, I'd be 80%, maybe 75% to 80% of the way through. But I have spent quite a bit of time exploring as well and learning different things about the game, you know, and just sort of adventuring, really, which is one of the big draw cards of this Zelda style.
Has it lived up to your expectations of it? And having seen probably a lot of it in the meta, in the metaverse, like now playing it now, is it still got that thing that everyone was so hyped about in the first place?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, cool.
I probably never bought a whole lot into the hype. Like, I've seen a lot of screenshots over the years since it's come out, because I think it was 2017 when it dropped. So it's been sort of nearly 4 years, I think. So I've seen lots of screenshots, and I saw quite a bit to start with, and, you know, a few GIFs and things like that on Reddit. And I was like, oh, that looks really, like, it looks really good. And there's some really creative stuff you can do in it as well. And I was always like, yeah, it'd be really cool to play that. But at the same time, I always had the wariness of the fact that I might start playing it and then get daunted by how big the game is.
Yeah, just like burnout.
Yeah, burnout. And that has not been the case at all. There's been a few times where I haven't necessarily had a big sort of goal or, you know, like heading towards one of the main quest items, and I've kind of gotten a little bored of, you know, adventuring a little bit. But then I can just go and do one of the quest things and progress more in that way, and then go back and try and find secrets later on.
Yeah, you can get the altars, or instead of going to the dungeon, that's right, you can do a little sub puzzle in between. Yeah,
correct. Yeah, you go to the shrines, and or you know, there's a few labyrinths in the game. There's lots of side quests you can do, helping out villagers and things like that. So there's so much content in this game.
Yeah, I've played a fair bit of it, but only emulated, which I'm sure distracted a little bit from the kind of movement controls, although they were kind of accounted for with some kind of shortcut keys.
But, yeah, I've turned the movement stuff off, which is one of the options. So I don't do the there's a few puzzles that you need to do with them, and I really find it a little bit awkward doing it. It's just, you know, the classic motion control problems that whatever you happen to be doing doesn't quite reflect what's going on 100%. That's not terrible, but the rest of it, sort of you can use the motion controls to aim, and I found that just super annoying, so I turned it off.
Yeah, sure. Did you play docked mode a lot, or is it mostly been handheld?
All docked.
All docked.
Nice. All docked.
Yep. Commandeering the big screen TV, I hope.
Yes. Yeah. Using the TV. Yeah. We've only got the one, so yeah.
Nice. How many dungeons are you so far through? Three or two?
So I've just finished the fourth Divine Beast. So that's the. There's the four Divine Beasts that you have to tame. And then you can go on and try and rescue Zelda and Hyrule Castle after that, and attack Ganon.
Oh, getting right near the end. Very exciting.
Yes. Yeah.
And how's the Switch generally, if you were to kind of give that a review?
It's a fantastic console for what it is. Like, it's got its place in the console market. We've got a few games for our kids, and like Animal Crossing, Mario Kart, Mario Party. They're all exactly what you expect from those games. They're all fun games to play. And it's a good console, and I would definitely recommend it. And games like Zelda, like, it's almost worth buying a Switch just for Zelda, I reckon.
How many Mario Party tantrums have you had, and how many were done by your kids and not by you?
I plead the fifth.
Mike no longer has a family. they've moved out.
We've had a few, right? So yeah. And Mario Kart and things like that. So, but you know, you just move on, and yeah, it's a lot of fun being had. Animal Crossing's been played quite a bit. That's been a very popular one. Not by me though.
Did anyone not have a console where they used to couch co-op and spend most of the time beating up their friends / brother?
You know, Mario 64 was really bad for it because it was just so much downtime in between things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember playing on Pokemon Stadium 2 with you, Dave. Do you remember that game?
Yeah.
And there was some, one of the mini games in that.
Lickitung's go around, you're going to say? Yeah.
Yes. That was hilarious, that game. I don't know why, it was so funny. You used to, it was like a sushi train thing going around, and you're in the middle, and you try to get as many points, but if you ate like a chili one, then you'd start going nuts and running around the little stage that you're on. Oh, that was hilarious.
And it was entirely random. Like, sometimes it'd be fine, sometimes it wouldn't be fine, but then you'd eat and go, whoa!
And he's just going to, like, run around nuts and steam coming out of his head and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, that was a fun one.
Late to the party, but no less welcome is Raindancer AU, George. Welcome, George.
Apologies for the late arrival.
No worries. How are you, George?
Oh, very well, thank you.
I caught your group flight in the Barrel Rollers channel on YouTube. I think I watched it.
Oh, yes.
It looked like a bit of fun.
Yes, great fun indeed. Sort of a test event. We wanted to try to keep it as motoring related, car related as possible. So we We're checking out race tracks, rally tracks, famous driving roads.
Oh, that's a great idea.
That kind of thing. Yeah. From the air. Yeah. Well, really, really gives you a great perspective about, you know, where the track is situated, the elevation, all that kind of thing.
Can you find tracks? Are the tracks well rendered in the games, or are you kind of looking at aerial shots of the Bing maps?
Most of the time, in three dimensions, they're pretty good. They're pretty damn good. Awesome. But the roads themselves vary from, you know, having a Z-axis to being painted onto the terrain, if you know what I mean.
Sure.
Sometimes they don't have any depth, and it can happen, you know, you're following a road and it looks like it's solid, and then because the satellite imagery only goes so far, it will suddenly become, you know, just a squiggly painted line, and then it will go back. So sure. It's interesting.
Hit the draw distance.
And definitely when you get in really close. So what we tried to do a couple of times is we actually landed on some racetracks, but then you have vegetation growing out from the middle of a racetrack randomly, so it sort of shatters the illusion.
It just hasn't been maintained during COVID.
Groundskeepers not doing their jobs.
That's right. Some cracks there. And a few.
Pandemic, I guess, yeah.
It's just a bit for Verstappen to drive over.
Racing tracks have turned into rally tracks.
There's got to be some guy out there who's a car enthusiast who's also able to build models and try and monetize that in MSFS.
Good call.
Yeah. No doubt that'll pop up at some point.
Good call.
I have to ask, though, how many people did you end up total with there? It seemed like a lot, like 30 or so. Was it that many?
Oh, no.
How many was it?
We didn't hit that sort of level. Though we did fly in some populated areas.
Ah, so maybe there were other people there.
That made it look like there were a lot more.
Yeah.
But I think for this one, we had about 8 people.
All right, cool. I just saw a sea of name tags, and I was like, holy shit.
No, I think we could get it, but at the moment, time zones are a tough thing to organize at the moment. It's always late for somebody and simultaneously early for other people. So, yeah, it's tough.
Beautiful. Well, glad that you're here. Dave, you've been underwater somewhat, freezing your balls off.
Whoa, I'm being below zero, yes, below zero. It's the long-awaited sequel to Subnautica, Below Zero. It's gone out of early access. I mean, if you were really eager, you could have played it up until basically whatever they've worked out now by now on your platform of choice. But it had an official release a bit over a week ago now. I'm just into the mid-game now, and it's done good. It gets a big tick from me.
Impressive.
Nice.
From people who haven't played the original Subnautica, basically that's located on a crater in a vast ocean, so there is kind of a very constrained area for you to look around in. The constraining in this instance is done as you are in a polar area, so there is ice and ice flows blocking off bits, and I've just gotten up to the point now where I can build where I need to build an above-ground base on top of an ice flow to access the rest of the map.
Right.
And there's lots of really complicated underwater caves. Everything underwater looks amazing. It looks really good, and it's clear they've put so much work into it, and it feels right.
Indeed, it's the hardest thing to do, right? Follow up a successful game with a sequel that actually improves on it. Did the early access of both the first title and the second title, you think, kind of allow this to happen?
To a degree, I think. I mean, because these guys were those who remember back in the day. They created a source mod called Natural Selection.
Hmm.
Oh,
right. I think I've got that in my Steam library. Yeah.
Well, I may very well have gifted it to you at some point.
I think you might have.
But yeah, I mean, creating, like, going from a Steam team-based shooter mod to a exploration game, a narrative exploration game, is a little bit different.
So different.
Yeah.
The critters are about the only commonality I can think of.
There are a couple of little things that, that give a wink that both Subnautica and Natural Selection are in the same universe.
Same universe.
But nice. Apart from that, it's just a little bit like that. But I'll mention something that most people find early on. In Subnautica, there are essentially dolphins who will play with metal and will actually grab metal out of your hand if you go and play with them in that way, or grab other fish in your hand. In Subnautica Below Zero, there are sea monkeys who will actually grab equipment from you and steal it from you and take it back to their nests.
Oh, no.
That many people found very frustrating, and it's just little things like that. And from what I've seen so far, it's really, really, it's ticking all the right boxes.
Have you been doing a lot of construction in this one?
The base construction is similar to Subnautica in that you can build your base in the way you see fit with the round buildings, lots of observatories, those sorts of things. There is also the ability to now, you could color your vehicles in Subnautica. You can now color your base with the addition of an appropriate control room. And there is also a few bigger rooms as well too in Subnautica Below Zero. So it'll provide you with a bit more room to actually make a proper habitable area that you can decorate appropriately, as opposed to just a round, fairly narrow area that you had to try and work with to try and actually make it look decent.
Does Below Zero also support VR like the original did?
That's a very good question, George. I'm definitely not going to look that up.
I think that they don't have it yet, but they've talked about bringing it in the future.
Okay.
But yeah, not at launch.
Okay.
Unfortunately.
Maybe I'll go back to the original, play that in VR while I wait.
Yeah, that was one of the first things I jumped into VR. And I think, though, it's one of those ones where you've got to have your VR legs first, just given the way the movement is. And I was able to get the sort of like swimming motion thing happening though, so you kind of have to kind of breaststroke almost with your VR controllers.
I'm not going to be using VR controllers.
Just on gamepad, yeah. But yeah, the movement underwater is pretty cool, and the visuals under there in VR, like the size and scale of everything, yeah is impressive.
I loved it in 2D, so love to experience it in VR.
They're looking at adding support for it in the future. Apparently there are mods for it now, but
all right.
I would imagine the mods may break a lot of things. The game has had a couple of little crashes for me so far, and that's not unusual with this game. I mean, the Subnautica, the engine the first time around had tons of crashes, and even patches as recently as this year introduced a whole lot more bugs than actually fixed them.
Classic. Speaking of just a side note on VR and it being modded into games, Red Dead Redemption 2, the guy who made the VR mod for the first one has built one for the second one, but he's selling it as opposed to giving it away as open source, which is understandable, I suppose. But I saw some video of that, and that looked pretty sweet. I think I would very much like to do that. That's got those issues where you do things like when you go to shoot, though, your reticle will be where you're looking, so it's not exactly lined up with the gun. And then a few other games that have modded VR kind of do that. Unfortunately, it's just a limitation of the implementation. So that's why official VR support's important, so that those sort of things are thought of.
But yes, I'll be eagerly playing the rest of Below Zero over the next couple of weeks. As I say, I'm about in the mid-game now. I'm not going to share any story-related spoilers because it is a narrative-driven game. Mm. But the key with these kind of games, I think, is to have something that you can't control but you also don't want to have. In the initial Subnautica, it was a virus, and I won't say what it is in this Subnautica yet. But you are looking for your sister on the pole of this planet, on the same planet as Subnautica, who's since gone missing.
Yeah, right. Is there other characters at all in this second one?
I highly doubt it. Right. Because I mean it is basically going to be you are alone by yourself.
Yep.
But gotcha. You know, they're adding lots of really cool things. Like, for example, my first death in this game, I was killed by killer penguins. I had the temerity of taking one of their babies away from an ice floe, and they came and pecked me to death.
Well, you deserved it.
Something I'll say about characters, like in the first one, there were characters, but your interactions with them were not, you know, they're in the past, and you're dealing with their actions in the past, but you do have characters that developed and you have some sort of interaction with them.
That's a fair point. Yeah. So, I mean, you will find, I have found logs of the scientists who are on this research station and what they were trying to do and what they found and what was going on the planet at the time. There is, people who played Sonic will remember, I mean, you got a lot of radio calls and things from distress ships and from yes. Altera. There is kind of an equivalent here, but I'm not going to talk about it too much in detail.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Well, I've been playing a fair bit of Ghost of Tsushima on the PlayStation 4 Ooh. Pro, and that is a cool game. It is very much a nice, how do I put this? You know how you, with most open world games since, I don't know, since Grand Theft Auto 5, let's say, like the first iteration, not the upcoming PlayStation 5 and Xbox Series X version, 7, 8 years later, kind of have always suffered from that, like, well, now that we've got this massive open world, like, what do you do to incentivize players to go around and actually spend time in it? You know, we'll just artificially inflate the amount of time you need to spend there so that people actually do spend some time there, to the point where you've got things like the Assassin's Creed series just stretching out over like hundreds of 100 to 150 hours kind of thing, where they just really don't need to. And you get that kind of open world burnout where it's like, oh, I'm a different character in a similar world, and or maybe a slightly different world, and I just don't have a lot to do. But
were you saying like the most recent Watch Dogs, where you just you get a new character in the same world?
I just finished that the other day.
Cool, nice. Cool. What Ghost of Tsushima does, though, is it tightens everything up a little bit, and it attempts to kind of not railroad you, but like kind of push you with the wind, which is actually a mechanic, to the goals of the story, but also like the kind of those extra little feature side questy things that you do in all of these games. And it does it in a fairly tight way. And I'm not sure it's like the answer to open world games, because it does kind of feel a little bit like it's always telling you where to go next. It does a damn good job of making you feel like you're in medieval Japan. Yeah, but I'm really into the control of the fighting, the melee combat kind of timing of the, I mean, it's that Arkham City style, Arkham Asylum, Arkham City's type of timed hits kind of thing. But you know, you're a sword wielding samurai, so that gives it some extra punch. Kind of playing it in Japanese with English subtitles, which adds a little bit. I've been loath to put on the Kurosawa mode, which makes it black and white and gives it a old school Japanese movie vibe.
Yeah.
It's just too colorful and pretty to do that. So look, it's one of those ones where I go into open world games and I'm always like, you, oh shit, here we go again, kind of thing. Where I know that I'm just gonna be like, you want me to do what? Like, you want me to go and get how many of these things? You want me to ride how far? Like, just to do the next thing? Yeah, there's always some point where I'm just like, I'm just done with this. Like, I don't need to spend extra time to get anything out of this game. Whereas so far, I haven't experienced that with this game, because it is kind of making me feel like I'm progressing at a reasonable rate, where I'm not just kind of left on my own to kind of burn out. So quite enjoying that. The wind mechanic, which I mentioned before, is kind of cool. Like, there'll always be these kind of like flowing wind lines, you know, vaguely. And if you need a reminder of where your next goal is, or your next marker is that you've chosen on the map, you swipe up on the little PlayStation pad and a gust of wind will come along and kind of like put, you know, show you where you're going, which is pretty sweet. So yeah, I think that alone helps that genre quite a bit. So the narrative is also, I wouldn't say it's like next level or anything, but it's competent. It's a competent narrative, which is also nice to experience. So that's Ghost of Tsushima on PlayStation 4.
And during the week, I've also played and also refunded Teardown. Yes, I mean, I know Mikester talked about Teardown earlier this year, and I've come on for a verbal stoush about the validity of Teardown.
Have at it. Round one.
Righto. Well, bring on your points.
Like, I mean, it was on sale, so I thought that was a good thing too. And I mean, in theory, like, it seems like a puzzly, silly kind of game where you can knock, tear down, right? You're knocking down things. I'd seen streams of it where people are trying to, you know, extract safes with trucks by driving trucks through houses. Like, okay, this seems all right. And I give it a go. And even in the first tutorial house, literally the house is held up by its chimney, even though you've removed everything around it.
Yeah. I will say that this has been spoken about by the developer, and it is an intentional thing in how buildings like destruct to facilitate some aspects of gameplay.
Right. And that's my next big question too, is that the gameplay is actually not focused around destruction. It's actually more focused around puzzle solving and parkouring around your given map, right? And particularly with the time element that is focused on it.
Yes, that's correct. So the tearing down occurs. You do all your tearing down before you start actually executing the, you know, to get to the objectives on the map.
And it took me a little while to figure out, like, okay, there's a vehicle, this place where I can actually get into the vehicle and literally just drive through this wall if I so wish, or drive through the wall of the house, or use the bulldozer to break open this area. There's, I think in the first time puzzle they give you, I realized, oh, there's a truck there. I can just drive the truck into the water as a bridge for myself. That's fine. But it seemed like to me, like, going into the untimed missions, the more exploratory fun missions, I could see that I was supposed to, in this two-story house, I was supposed to drive this flatbed truck into the first story and then knock down the second story to put the safe directly into the bed of the truck, then drive the truck into the water, basically. But then I then failed to see why would I want to do this mission again unless it was for a better time.
The game certainly points you in a solution. They're usually, the obvious solution isn't the solution that will get you the best time or be the most efficient. So, yeah, there is sort of that aspect to it, as in it will give you enough hints or objects and things, like you say, that, oh, the most obvious way to complete this mission is by doing X, Y, then Z. But then you can actually, if you want to get more than the minimum objectives in the levels, particularly later on, doing that will not get you anywhere close to being able to get all the objectives in one hit. So it's like a stretch kind of thing. You can, I guess it's easy difficulty per se, if you just do the minimum objectives and it gives you hints along the way, kind of like Mario would in it, you know, loiters a turtle in some area to get over a jump. It's kind of obvious at one point that, oh, I need to jump onto that turtle to get to the other side and bounce off it. It'll do that. But if you want to do everything in the level and find all the secrets, then you have to start getting quite creative with like how you manipulate the environment to get all the objectives.
And to be honest, I didn't get that far in it. I think I gave up after about the fourth or fifth level after. I saw that this is what it was giving me, and I'm like, yeah, I don't particularly care. Like, I can manually drag safes into the water if I don't have a timer. That's perfectly fine, you know? Like, I don't see, particularly given that there's no bonuses for me or unlockables to getting a better time.
So if you complete all the objectives, then you get more cash or whatever it is, or you get more rockets and pipe bombs and more tools as you go along. Mm. And you can have more of each in the level, which allows you to do more destruction and be more creative. But you can certainly get through the game without everything.
So it was less than 2 hours in order to refund it then, Dave?
That's right. Yeah, I was looking at it and I'm going, I don't really feel like this is grabbing me. This is not. I see what it's doing. And yep. I mean, tear down to me, like, I wanted something where the physics were a little bit more obvious. It wasn't just break holes in all of these objectives to go from one to the other then get out quickly sort of
gotcha.
Thing.
Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's surprisingly heavily reviewed as positive. I think it's overwhelmingly positive overall. So interesting to hear a counterpoint.
No, I'm just wrong. It's very easy. I'm very much wrong.
No, it's your tastes, you know. Like, there's no such thing as wrong. Well, when it comes to criticism,
I couldn't play it in VGA 640 by 480, so clearly I couldn't be happy with it.
It doesn't run in DOS.
You certainly have like valid criticism in how the game's structured, and yeah, it's sort of. Some of the challenges are quite easy, and like you say, the solutions are kind of given to you in some ways once you kind of figure out how the game makes you want to solve some of the problems.
Sorry, Mike, I was just going to say, like, does it lure the stretch goals in front of you? Like, well, here, obviously, you could do this in, like, 8 seconds or something, but, like, can you do it in 3? And then you've got to think outside the box to do that.
There's a few challenges. There's a couple of driving challenges that you have a stretch goal. But other than that, it's just in this mission, you have 3 compulsory objectives and maybe 2 optional objectives. So you'll go through the first time and you'll probably get the 3. But then going back later on and trying to get the 5 is where you have to start being a little more creative in your manipulation of the world.
Gotcha.
So they're there, but it doesn't really incentivize you to do so, I'd say. Would you agree with that, Dave?
Oh, look, I mean, there is objectives, right? That's the incentive, is to say that first time through, you may not worry about these things. But I suppose the good thing for the viewers at home is that it's still in early access. So they can still change a whole lot of how the game works. I mean, the example there being, I mean, you get more rewards or actually give more objectives unlocked as you go along or those sorts of things.
And there is more content coming along and they're expanding it to have, so there's missions with like the helicopter gunship involved. So, and like more areas where you can go in the, like the free play sandbox mode, where you can just go nuts destructing things and make your PC cry.
It is a very pretty looking game. Did it run all right on your rig, Dave?
I don't think there's any issues. I mean, it is just voxel graphics. There's nothing hugely complicated going on there apart from the number of voxels.
Mm.
It's also ray traced.
Yeah, it's ray traced.
All lighting's ray traced, yeah.
Rain effects and weather effects.
Yes.
Yeah. That's woken me up.
So it's not RTX, so it's not hardware accelerated per se.
I see.
So it's not a video ray trace. So the engine, they have software made all the ray tracing lighting in the entire game.
Yeah, similar to how something like Valheim works, right? Where it's like a voxel look, but like really well lit.
Underneath the hood, there's more going on, yes.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, yeah. Sorry, I haven't played more than about 10 minutes of Valheim, so it's a comparison I haven't been able to grasp.
Let's talk about Valheim quickly. So there's not a lot to say. There's been a bit of a lull of activity on the Eternal Beta Valheim server, and I think everyone is just kind of either reached the point of you know, we've kind of completed most of the content at about 100 hours worth. Very good value for money, that 100 hours. But yeah, we might have left a few of the members behind, it's given the different rates of play between everyone. So what the reason that's a problem is because as you've kind of start destroying the bosses, there's five bosses in the game so far, that biome's boss will not that boss sorry the enemies of that type of biome will start appearing all everywhere in the map. So if you're a new player and you come along into our server at the moment, there's going to be like skeletons and there's going to be like things that you can't defeat in just the starting area, in the meadows biome. So it's a little bit like, you know, I think that's what happened to Noclus when he came in the first time he joined our server and just immediately got killed by something. His little stone is still sitting there.
That's floored me. That's an amazing design choice. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, this is on a permanent server, remember? So, I mean, not everyone's playing it that way. A lot of people are just jumping into their friend's game or whatever, and it's like wherever they're up to. So, yeah, we're having a shared server, though. It's a little bit like that. So we're considering, though, a server wipe so that perhaps when the new content comes out, perhaps earlier, and just to kind of start over and make it fresh again and, a different seed. So we'll have a bit of a different world to explore. So I suppose we'll keep everyone updated with what's happening with that, maybe vote on it or something. Because Susanna and Andy have put a substantial amount of time into building some huge structures in this game in our current world. So it'd be... I don't know, we should do some event where we blow everything up or something. Use some console commands.
Mm.
But Mike, you actually are keen on giving it a run?
Yeah. Yeah, I played about 10 minutes. I was really tired that night. Jeff gave me some armor, I think. And then I was like, nah, I'm going to bed. And literally haven't opened it since. So I was away from the podcast and all that for a while for work.
Yeah.
And now that I'm back, no one's been playing it. So I've kind of it's been sitting there on Steam and I'm like, well, it's meant to be good. So, you know, my 16 minutes of playtime, which included about 10 minutes of idling, I think. it's like.
Yeah. Cool. Well, we'll get in.
Maybe I should refund it and then buy it on special.
Yeah. Still in early access as well. So,
yeah.
George, have you got anything on your recently played list that you want to talk about?
Well, there was Legion, Watch Dogs Legion.
Oh, Legion.
Completed. Yeah.
Yes, cool. Awesome.
And I admittedly forced myself just to get to the end of it. And there were probably two times where the story mission that I needed to complete to progress almost caused me to just stop and quit.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. There was one particularly horrible mission. You know, it's a sort of thing where, you know, you've got an open world, you've got so many ways to approach a problem, and then suddenly you're in a mission where there's sort of only one way to approach it. That kind of thing.
Right.
You know, and it's completely different to the play style that I'd adopted up to that point. And, you know, you know, you touched on open world burnout and the like earlier, Steve. The way I approach open worlds is I like to really, you know, turn off things like minimaps and GPS coordination. So
get the immersion,
you know, it literally isn't like I'm following a line from one spot to another spot, the shortest route possible.
Yeah.
To get to the next objective, I sort of like I try to pay attention to things like, oh, you know, this is, you know, we're going to this location or this is where we need to go, and then me trying to work out where to go and plotting my own way to get through, not using fast travel, that sort of thing.
Yep, absolutely.
But I got to a point where I was fast traveling everywhere, and I was just like, I want this over with. I want to finish the story, but I want it over with. Mm,
mm.
So, yeah, it was mildly satisfying to complete it. But I much preferred. I enjoyed Watch Dogs 2. This one I didn't enjoy anywhere near as much.
Right. What about the ray tracing? Pretty. Yeah, that's what I was going to ask.
Very pretty game.
It was high up there for you because of that reason.
Yeah, it was a very pretty game. And that's another reason why I was happy to... Yeah, that's why I'm happy to, in most open world games, to make my own way through and not take the shortest route, you know?
Yeah.
Because you don't know what you're going to see
With a game like Red Dead Redemption or something like that, where the mechanics are in the game, like you can just spend hours hunting or running around fishing and just admiring the landscape and the beauty of the constructed world, then absolutely, you know, get lost in it, and that's cool. But not every game is like that. I mean, almost none are like that. And they're usually just repeated areas or sections of textures and things, right? So you end up not really finding anything when you go looking. And that's the letdown.
Yeah, no. Watch Dogs is nice because you're exploring, you know, a city, and that's what I liked about Watch Dogs 2 and to a lesser extent, Legion. But yeah, I'm happy I finished it. There were still, you know, you finish it and you're still able to run around in the world and finish off all the side missions. I've got no compulsion to do that. There is one side mission that only opens when you finish the game, and I did finish that one, but it was a quick, easy one, and I actually enjoyed that, and I wish I had some stuff like that to do before the end of a game. But yeah, I'm done. It's being uninstalled. I'm moving on.
Narratively, did it hold up? Does it have a decent storyline to it, or is it just something that's not really well
thought
through?
I don't even think the second one really had a decent
second one was a, like a decent setup in the sense of who you are and stuff, but it never really fulfilled.
Yeah. Did you free London?
Sort of, not really. Not really. Like in Watch Dogs 2, you actually free San Francisco. You don't really and it's not really giving away stuff too much. But, I mean, you make a difference, but you don't. But the narrative, look, probably about the same. But the fact that Watch Dogs 2 centered around one guy and his story, I think made it more interesting for me to follow than this did. I don't know. You're swapping characters around, you're swapping personalities around, and I don't know. In Cyberpunk, you know, you don't have the same identity, for instance, as you do in Watch Dogs 2. You don't have a defined identity, but you sort of do at the same time. It's weird. I don't know how to describe it.
I thought it would suffer from a bit of a lack of coherency, given that, you know, you can kind of jump between all sorts of different characters, and it would make it a bit hard to have a strong narrative thread through that.
But look, as a taste of a future of what I think should start to become the norm in terms of graphics, I think it's very exciting, and I'm happy to have experienced it for that.
Nice. Sounds good.
But I'm ready for the next thing, which I think is going to be Metro Exodus.
Ooh.
Yes.
Ray tracing and with the PlayStation 5 controllers.
DualSense controller. Haptic,
on PC. It's going to be great.
Yeah, that's going to be an interesting thing to try out to see how that all works.
Yeah.
Did you pick that up just recently because of the ray tracing add-on?
I haven't picked it up yet, but that's why I'm picking it up.
Yep.
I mean, I was interested in it because it was already a ray tracing title, but it's just great timing for me as well.
The rework looks amazing. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, enjoy that for sure.
Yeah.
I've got a new one that I only started playing today, actually.
Ooh.
And that's Knockout City. It's a dodgeball multiplayer game on Game Pass and Xbox. I'm not sure about other platforms, it's an EA game. Yeah, there you go.
Yes. Yeah.
Look, colorful, like does give you a little bit of a Fortnite-y kind of a vibe, but deceptively strategic. In that, so you've kind of, you run around, you've got to find a ball in the level to, you know, to use as your dodgeball to throw. You've got to, like, you've got to charge up your throw. So if you get to full charge, it can kind of do a double hit and knock someone out. You can roll yourself into a ball and other people can throw you and vice versa. If you fully charge a teammate who's rolled up, then they kind of get fired into the air and they can come down as like a bomb and an AOE kind of damage of their choosing or of their navigation. So that's a technique. It's kind of 3-on-3 matches. There's quite a lot of verticality in the levels. I think it's pretty cool. It's sort of in the vein of, I suppose, somewhere between Fortnite and Fall Guys. It's like you jump in quickly. It's a bit of fun. It's not violent.
So it's like Ricochet on Steam, you're saying?
I have not heard of Ricochet on Steam. Is that a game you're familiar with, Dave?
You're showing your gamer cred there, Steve. You're losing out not knowing what Ricochet is.
Yeah, Ricochet is 1st November 2000 release date. Is that the one?
That sounds correct, yes.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's futuristic dodgeball. Yeah.
Mm.
Yes, yeah, sick. Well,
it's not 2000, was it?
Well, that's the release date on Steam at the moment. It's saying 1st of November 2000.
Nah. It's not that old, is it?
You dispute Steam's listing?
Well,
it'd be slightly before Steam 1.0, Mike, yeah? Something like that?
Yeah, see, I thought it was... Well, it was Half-Life 1 engine, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Maybe Google, it is that old.
Google also confirms the 1st of November 2000.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I wasn't really disputing it. I was more disputing the fact that it's 21 years old.
Yes.
Yeah. And it makes no top 10 GOAT lists anywhere.
No, so I have not played this game, so I cannot compare it. Maybe if you were to have a...
We could definitely make it a multiplayer Mondays feature.
Yeah, this is more this looks more of like a Tron type of game though, is it? It's more of a disc throwing game.
It is a disc game, yes.
Yeah, but that's like dodgeball.
Kind of, yeah, I suppose so, yeah.
You're just replacing one circular flat object with a fully circular object.
You're adding an entire extra plane to the object though, like, you know, going from flat to round. I'd argue that's a big enough difference.
But Knockout City,
on Game Pass, check it out if you just want to have some kicking around fun. We didn't have any questions this week, so jump in the Eternal Beta channel, ask EBP podcast, and throw us a question so that we can answer it on next episode, whenever that is. We're on a fortnightly schedule at the moment, so doing our best to stick to that. For now, if you want us to do more regular episodes, write us in at eternalbetapodcast@gmail.com or tweet us at eternalbetapod and let us know so we can get on to that. System status is up next. George, we didn't talk about last week. You got a couple of new things in your rig. I think we mentioned the 3090 and your Quest 2, but you got a new steering wheel?
Oh yeah. I bought... So, steering wheel, for some people, means the entire thing.
Yep. This is literally the wheel, right?
there's a wheelbase, then there's a hub.
Yeah.
So the wheelbase has the motor. Then there's a hub which attaches to the wheelbase, and that's got sort of like the electronics and the buttons. And then there's a physical wheel, which has got nothing. It's just like aluminium and leather That's yeah. literally it.
It's yeah.
Right. And yes, I did. The original Fnatic wheel, the lever was starting to crack, and the stitching was coming off. That's a couple of thousands of hours of use.
Yep.
So it had a really good run.
What's a wheel cost you these days?
Well, I bought a genuine race car wheel.
Right.
So it's a bit more than your so the Fnatic ones are about half price because they're not designed to meet any sort of crash standards. Whereas the one I bought actually is. So it's overkill, but
I
wanted something nice for myself.
Yeah. I've been eyeing off G29s and stuff again, just being like, oh, maybe it's time to get back into
sim racing.
Prices
are more reasonable now.
Yeah, they're doing around the 300 mark at the moment, which I know is probably not as cheap as I could get. But
industry itself is about to change fundamentally, I feel. It'll take a couple of years to play out, but Fnatic, which is the company that I have most of my gear with, mm-hmm. they are replacing all of their belt-driven wheels with direct what's drive. Considered the highest level type direct drive wheel.
Yeah, right.
And their entire range is going to be direct drive.
Amazing.
So that's going to put a lot of pressure on Thrustmaster and Logitech to actually step up their game as well, because Fnatic will basically be offering direct drive wheels for a price of belt driven wheels. So I think some big things are going to change. Like Logitech have not changed in like 10 years.
Yeah, a lot of pressure, literally. So, direct drive is much more powerful, significantly more powerful than belt driven, and more accurate as well.
Yes, indeed. Well, direct drive is like the name entails, the wheel is directly attached to the motor axis, whereas a belt drive or a gear drive, the motor itself is sitting offset, and there are gears or belts that connect to the wheel. So there's some offset, and you lose some fidelity, you lose some speed, you lose a bit of power.
I saw a YouTube video of a really cheap Chinese direct drive wheel.
Yes.
Yeah, have you seen that?
Yes.
Is that any good?
They're not easy to get a hold of.
Well, not right now, but yeah.
Well, yeah, and they're just in general, you know, right. where do you find a stockist, you know? What happens if you're, you know, $1,000 wheel has an issue, who's going to help you out?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I saw these things were cheap as chips though. This is a while ago though.
They're relatively cheap for a direct drive,
right?
But that's all changing as well.
Yeah, gotcha.
They won't be anymore.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Yeah. Well, yeah,
that's
why maybe
I mean
I'll wait then.
The Fnatic's made a huge move. And I think the other manufacturers will have to react to it.
Mike, so we talked about your Switch earlier. Anything else going on with your rig at the moment? Hardware terms?
It's running well.
Excellent.
So,
I mean, you had enough dramas in the last 6 months.
I have. So, don't have a 3080 yet.
Yeah,
right. Still coming.
Still
in the pipeline.
Yeah, we'll add that to the questions along with is Stadia still a thing? Jeff,
yes, it is,
the freaking legend Pope in our Discord has just asked, "What brand steering wheel did George buy?"
It's a Fnatic. It's a Club Sport 2.5, and it's just been discontinued by Fnatic.
Oh, wow.
Because all the belt drive wheels are going.
Right.
They only sell direct drive wheels.
So this is happening like as we speak, kind of
now.
A refreshing.
Yeah, it's literally happening. And so Fnatic are introducing this entry level direct drive wheel. So in the hierarchy, this level is actually below my wheel, but because it's direct drive, the price point elevates it to my wheel, but it sort of renders my wheel obsolete because it's direct drive. And yeah, I'm just going to buy one. I'm going to buy one. As soon as they're out, I'm going to buy one.
Yeah. Well, no doubt you're going to get the use out of it that makes it worthwhile. Absolutely. Awesome. Yeah, no, well, I'll have to stay away from looking up those things. My bank account balance post-move is significantly down. So, hence, I picked up NBA 2K21 for free on You'll Love This Guy's Epic Game Store.
Whoa, party!
Yeah.
Oh, shit, we should all pick that up.
You should all pick that up so that we can do some online classic multiplayer.
I'm gonna do that right now.
Question for you, Steve.
Yes.
How large is the install?
It's an 80 gigabyte install. Most of that is textures and so on. So it's not a small one. So it took me overnight.
Damn. I mean, the point is that 80 gig includes textures from last year as well, though, right?
Well, textures from the last 5 years, really, because they haven't really changed a lot. So.
I mean, there are a lot of different shades of basketball stadium. Mm, you know, like, so what's the word I'm looking for? The floor.
The floors, yeah. Yeah. Look, there's also floor mods you can get if you're not happy with the ones included in the game. But maybe they've
those, or just choose what I like, just included, or
no. You're gonna have to buy some virtual currency for those and unlock it. No. I joke. The game looks decent. Again, on PC, we have unluckily, by their decision, by Take-Two 2K Interactive's decision to only release the next-gen version on next-gen consoles and not the more powerful PC platform. So we have the old-gen version of 2K21 for no reason at all. But for free, I suppose you can't complain. This game really, it just feels like, and I don't know, long-time listeners will know my passion for video game basketball and basketball generally, but it just feels like I'm playing the game from 5 years ago. It's just the same thing with like some slight little tweaks and slight little changes. It just hasn't got any better. It hasn't got any deeper. It hasn't got any more mechanics that make it worth like, you know, oh, this is the reason I want to pick this year's one up, which always used to be the case, you know. Either it was a leap in graphics or a leap in, you know, the types of moves you could pull off or the things you could do, the way you could play basketball in the game, the way it was simulated, has all been left by the wayside. And the only thing they really seem to update every year now is the rosters and the different methods of taking your money off you. Via virtual currency and how many ads they can add into the game. So like I said before in the previous episode to this about playing NHL 21 and MLB The Show 21, whenever you go to a menu screen in 2K21, you'll be hit with an ad for the latest card pack that, you know, has released that day for the My Team mode. Or the My Player mode, you know, some sort of special thing for that. And it's just, yeah, they're trying to railroad you into these modes that require you to spend money in order to enjoy them. When the real fun for me is, you know, doing a franchise season or the My GM mode has some cool stuff in there if you never played it before. So for a newcomer, I think that you would have, there's some fun in there to be had. Like, you know, you'd be like, this is cool, that's fun, whatever. But for a long-time player, it's just, ugh. Yeah, it's already getting to me.
Well, to counter your argument, if there's been no innovation over the last 5 years, how much innovation has there been in real basketball over the 5 years?
Well, there was. You might argue that when COVID hit, they were the first sport to return in the bubble, where they built an entire set of stadiums inside Disneyland and took all the players to Florida and locked them in Disneyland so that they could play out the rest of the season in the finals. That was pretty innovative.
Yes, but the game didn't change, so.
Well, they had no fans either.
Well.
And they had virtual fans of like big screens in where the fans were and people's webcams all up on it.
Yep. Yeah, that's what you need, people's webcams.
Yeah. It's So, yeah, they innovate, I suppose, but nah, you're right. Having played some of these other sports games seem to be doing a better job of getting closer to the real thing. And that's not just in visual fidelity, but also in like the mechanics and the control schemes and just kind of like, you know, working towards like the AI simulating the game. And like basketball's not an easy game to simulate. I'll give them that. But, I mean, Madden's fallen off the rails in this same way. I don't know what needs to happen other than EA coming back with a competitive or a third party coming back with a competitive NBA title. They don't have an exclusive license to the NBA. Just no one else is making one. So they're just a behemoth for no reason, and that's why they're allowed to kind of stagnate like this.
That was the thing, right? I mean, I've been watching streams of older consoles. I know, big surprise to you is at home. And I mean, lots of different people made games about baseball and basketball and football and American football. And like, they had little things like you could play a baseball game where you only played like one innings a match. If you wanted to, you could play the key innings in that match if you wanted to. Why can't you play the key 10 minutes in a round of baseball or in like, you know, and a round of baseball? Hello, young kids.
Yes. Yeah, well, you can do that in MLB, the show, in their March to October mode, which is where you get to kind of drop in and out of, or it drops you into games at certain points with a kind of objective or a goal to try and achieve by the end of the game. So, like, yeah, like that sort of thing would be cool. It would stop the need for the grind. But I'm more talking about, like, I mean, every year there's a big community on Operation Sports and NLSC and on YouTube generally of guys altering the sliders in the game to radically kind of try and solve the issues with the AI as best they can or get around them in some way in order to make the game play like NBA basketball does.
Right. Instead of mucking up, instead of to beat the system that the game, that the developers have set up to
score points. Yeah. But you can only use those slider, you know, kind of methods via, you know, in offline games. So it's only for when you're playing yourself or you're playing locally at home.
Mm.
You can't do it over the internet. You can't do it in any of the online modes. So it just is what you got. And it's very sluggish feeling in the kind of base mode. So anyway, yeah, it's just another year of disappointment. But you know, can't argue with free. So
this year, it's free disappointment.
Yeah, if you like, you know, you have passing interest in basketball, you want to load up some 93 Bulls and, you know, jump on the Jazz with Karl Malone
sounds interesting to me.
Yeah, that's where the fun is. Like, that's what I spent last night doing. Played till a little bit too late last night, doing some classic games from the mid 90s and early 2000s and stuff. So, yeah, we should do that on a multiplayer Mondays. Or a Friday night, whatever. Cool. Well, I think we've been going quite a while so far, guys. Do you wanna wrap up there?
So I'll hop in one thing before we go.
What's going on? What's going on?
So something I put in the chat a bit earlier. Basically, I mean, I had to go onto Twitch on an Amazon Fire, which was not too bad. But of course, going straight to the Amazon Fire, it took me to the Twitch main page. Now, like
that's a streaming stick, is it? The Amazon Fire.
That's the one. Yep, for a TV.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
because isn't that what the streamers use to warm up their hot tubs?
Well, shush, you're preempting. You already know the story here. But
no, I don't.
Like a clever boy, I normally have my Twitch bookmark and go straight to my following page, so I don't care about browsing. I don't care. I know who I want to follow, who I want to watch. But going onto the TV for the first time, it shows me up here are the top streams on Twitch, and there was a hot tub stream. Now, I must admit, I'm relatively new to this, and I understand it's been going for a fair bit of this year at least. But the big thing was apparently that with these women were in hot tubs on streams, the biggest one there basically got demonetized.
She did, yes.
Wow.
Advertising
by the platform?
Advertising was suspended by Twitch.
Yeah.
And that
Happened.
And that essentially, in theory, if she streamed on the regular schedule that she would do for a whole year, that would cost her about $500,000.
No.
Well, I think that's rather aggressive. Like, that's 15 hours a day for the rest of the year, which is not going to happen. But I think the
advertising.
I don't think they get that much in advertising.
She went on stream and talked about how much she had made and how much she was now making from advertising.
And so that doesn't include
tipping?
Just remember
this particular...
No way.
This particular individual
also... I know who we're talking about, yeah.
Yeah, they have like a very high-ranked OnlyFans as well.
Yeah, that too, yeah.
Yeah, so this is a feeder, advertising feeder for other streams of revenue.
But no, Twitch just suspended her advertising revenue, which means the revenue that Twitch pays her for ads, which is minuscule.
Well, no, she's saying so for 15 hours a stream with 15,000 viewers, getting about $1,000 a day in advertisements, and after the getting demonetized, it was $130. That's what she claimed. Right. I don't want to worry too much about the dollar figure because. Twitch has now interestingly got a hot tub category.
It's a category?
There is now a category now, which I'm having a laugh at. And, like,
wow.
People are up in arms for various things about this, you know. I mean, women aren't real gamers, she's not a real gamer, all that sort of thing there. And this just provides ammunition to that kind of argument. But what I'd like people at home to think about is that a point that Mike brought up last time we talked about Twitch is that Amazon doesn't really know what they want to do with Twitch. And the big thing is when you sign up to Twitch, you say you're over 13 years old. So that way they can show you MANR rated games, right? Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Now, if Twitch gets in trouble with the American government, say, for example, for showing blatant pornography on their platform.
Belly buttons, that sort of thing.
If you remember, men had to wear shirts on Twitch at one point. You couldn't go around bare-chested. They had to wear singlets or shirts. So
you also, on the hot tub thing, a male did a stream and got banned because they were inadvertently displaying more than they should whilst being clothed. And that caused an uproar. Yeah. So you could clearly see an outline in their swimwear.
Yeah.
And they got banned because of that. And yet, there were several other people on this platform wearing significantly less clothes and showing a lot more skin than they did.
Let alone the people who do body painting. Nude body painting.
Yes. Yeah. Correct. Yeah. So, anyhow, we're digressing. Continue, Dave.
Yeah. No. And just, I mean, it's going to be a very interesting thing for Twitch to see how they handle this because I'm moving it to another category means they can probably control those not being shown on the front page as much anymore, and they're going to try and mitigate it that way because that way they still get the money from advertisers because, let's face it, they're bringing in a lot of money from advertisers and subs. But if something goes wrong, they're going to really take action. So I imagine all the hot tub streamers are going to be doubling down now and putting a lot of effort into making as much money as they can very quickly in anticipation of getting kicked off Twitch or Twitch taking action.
Well, Twitch's official announcement here, they've said, being found to be sexy by others is not against our rules, and Twitch will not take enforcement action against women or anyone on our service for their perceived attractiveness.
Except for shirtless men, or men wearing pants underwater, yeah.
Yeah, interesting. Controversy. Indeed.
Yes, have a think about that at home. Write in, tell us what you think. Tell me how wrong I am.
Twitch can't ignore this stream of revenue. Like, whether or not at some point they split Twitch further into Twitch and Twitch gaming. So you have an entire site that is just gaming related Twitch, you know, like old Twitch, we'll call it, right? And then you have new Twitch, which is all your lifestyle type streams, like IRL streams, talk shows, sports content, political content, all that kind of stuff. They can't ignore that half, because if they do, then YouTube will take it.
Yeah, that's it. And, you know, modeling, like, surely, like, they're just going to try and expand into as... I mean, yeah, you say they don't know what they're doing, but I think they're actually just trying to feel out what they can do.
Well, I think
That's Twitch doing something, but Mike's point was Amazon doesn't know what it wants to do with Twitch.
Yeah. Oh, right, sorry. Yeah, no.
So Amazon doesn't understand Twitch and what Twitch could be for them.
Yeah. Wholeheartedly agree.
Not what Twitch is.
Are you saying, currently, though, that Twitch is making this decision to make the category, or that's coming from Amazon on high?
It's definitely Twitch.
This is fairly classic for Twitch in terms of how it's evolved over the years. Yeah. It just starts and then they just let it roll and see what happens. And then at some point, something like this occurs, i.e., you know, a few years ago, shirtless dudes and like, oh, no, you can't show nipple type stuff. Hmm. And now it's hot tubs. It's like, well, okay, well, we can't really say, no, you can't do it because it's not against the terms of service, et cetera, and you make a lot of money for us, and that's the real reason. So now we'll just put you in a different corner to everything else. Hmm. So, because if you think about even 2 years ago, there was no podcast section on Twitch. Mm. There was no IRL section. And so they're just slowly evolving with the content that Twitch streamers have come up with over the years, and what has made the platform great originally just for games is now expanding because other people are seeing gamers make lots of money off this and going, well, I can make lots of money too by being creative in a different manner, i.e. painting myself.
For sure. Well, the money's rolling in.
Jeff has added there's literally a stream on Twitch with a girl trying on bikinis. That's on YouTube too. Bikini try-ons are a thing.
Is that your latest video, George?
It's recommended to me. It's always recommended to me.
I mean, it was
probably because I've uploaded videos of myself trying on bikinis, so that's probably what caused that.
I mean, it was,
and that's why I subscribe.
It was pointed out to me. I mean, YouTube has already done this problem already, and they have now that mature content warning for those for uploaders, right? Mm-hmm. You need to tick that box, and that determines what advertisers you get and whether you're advertised to children or not, right?
YouTube is stricter in their content.
YouTube is way more strict.
Yeah.
So YouTube has dealt with this already in their way. And I mean, Twitch.
So I guess you could look at it in terms of like, YouTube is your family sort of site to a degree, you know, like broadly speaking. Yep. Family friendly, we'll call it, or more generally just for all audiences per se for most content, clearly not all. You know, there are some sections where swearing and all that sort of stuff's fine. Twitch is straddling the divide between cam sites, etc., and YouTube now, and that divide is quite large. And they will take some of the cam sitey type things with these hot tub streams and other types of streams, but they'll also at the same time dip into YouTube's section as well. And they're going to try and keep their market as wide as they can and get as much data from it as they can.
Indeed. Well, if you've got an opinion on that, make sure you hit us up at eternalbetapodcast@gmail.com and tweet us at eternalbetapod on Twitter. Or just join our Discord. Like, thanks to everyone who's been listening to our first Discord stage episode tonight. Really appreciate that. And we might keep that going because the interactivity element is useful for our conversation, but also just engagement generally. Thanks, guys, for coming on tonight. I think we might leave it there.
Thank you.
Cheers, Dave.
Cheers.
Cheers, George. Go on, say something, Mike. Please.
No.
Cheers, Mike.
See you, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Thanks a lot. All right, we'll be back in a couple of weeks. See you guys.